Hey everyone, thank you for joining us here at Seeds of Freedom. Welcome to another podcast episode. I'm Sierra and I'm here with my co-host Marco Andrade, and we have a super special guest today who I'm really excited to talk to, Shivani Davids, who is the founder of Reimagined Learning Community and Ecoversity based in South Africa. He is an unschooler, an SDE facilitator, social justice advocate, among many other things. He has a super rich experience and history that has led him to the work that he does in liberation, decolonization, community building, and radically reimagining education. So there's going to be lots to talk about. The three of us actually met at an Ecoversities gathering last October. And yeah, we've definitely got lots to dig into.
I just want to say that I have the privilege to travel with Shivani in a bus in Mexico. And we share a lot of talk and more than that, like, you know, like a deep connection with the soul, with his heart. And I'm really happy to see him again and to talk to him in this morning. So welcome, Shivani. I'm really excited to see you again, brother.
Very much, Sierra, and thank you very much, Marco. I think with both of you, it's I'm also deeply privileged and deeply honored to be sharing this space and to engaging in some of the conversation that I think a lot of us have touched on through our time. So yeah, I'm Shivani Davids. I think Sierra has covered everything, and if there's more, I'm sure it will come up as we go. But I just want to extend a deep sense of gratitude for the opportunity. Thank you very much, guys.
When Shivani and I met in Ecoversities, I remember just like super quickly getting into a whole bunch of really cool, deep stuff and really listening to, I was really impacted by your story, like your journey to the work that you do. Yeah, I just remember being really drawn in. And then hearing about your learning community in South Africa is kind of what I've often like dreamed about could exist, but never was aware that like that kind of a community space kind of based on a different frame that I think I've been used to, that I've been exposed to in the world of SDE and unschooling. And so I think that's where I want to go with the question is, and just getting your perspective on it. But one common, really common concern or like critique that I get often when I talk to people who are learning about self-directed education for the first time is that, okay, that's fine and great, like for people, you know, for families who are already like well-educated or for people who have a lot of resources, that we still need, at least here in Canada, very much people believe in like the government funded like public education. It's like we need that in order to have places for people who don't have resources to go. And like there's some dissonance for me, and I'm trying to get to like explaining it even in my own head. But like given that we like live in an exploitative economy, right? And like I can understand like that reasoning. But there's also like, I can't shake this feeling that like SDE and unschooling has like promise beyond just like a space where parents go to drop off their kids and where it's just like another form of childcare. And there's like so much deeper in regenerating new cultures and liberation. I think, especially in like the Western mindset, it's almost like SDE is just like another, like a new or like an evolved version of something that is owned by the Western culture. Like, so I guess the question is like, is SDE elitist, and are there prerequisites for self-directed education for families? Like, is it realistic for families who are less advantaged than other families? Are there prerequisites for societies? Like, can SDE flourish in a non-democratic society? And can it survive in societies with structural oppression? I would really, really, really love to hear from you specifically, and also from Marco, from your perspective.
Clarification, SDE, for the ones who are listening to us for the first time, is self-directed education. Shivani will jump in and you will understand a little bit better, and me too, but SDE is self-directed education.
Thank you very much, Marco, for that, making that clear. I think also with that said, I would just also like to begin to address the question, the awesome question that Sierra has posed, because I think in the exploration into or in the navigation of self-directed education, one will begin to find that it's not just one term. It has so many different ways of showing up for everybody. And yes, self-directed education can be justified as an elite movement. Self-direction can be justified as a capitalistic movement. Self-directed education can be seen also something that is held by those in specific places of power and privilege that are using it to conserve a specific way of thinking. That is true. And I would not like to I would like us to become very sensitive to this, because this is part of our world as it stands. However, on the other end of the coin, and we would like to, in terms of the African context, I speak from South Africa, and I think with a lot of these words, the jargon, such as self-directed education, for a lot of people, it might sound like a nuance or something that lends itself to their thinking of the Western mind. However, for most people that I engage with this term, it's more about the remembering. We are not here to create anything new. We are here to remember. The idea of schooling as it stands in the South African context is not more than 150 years old. So what was there prior to schooling, or specifically learning as it stands in the context today? In our context, we have this term called emakhaya. Emakhaya is a Zulu word for home, but not home as a locative space, home as a cultural space, home as a timeless space, home as a feeling, home as a smell, and home as a taste. So when we speak about emakhaya, there's a whole verse that we can begin to jump into. And it's a one where young people have the ability to leave the home before the sun rises, and have the ability to come back home just as the sun is about to set. When a young child has the ability to run, where a young child has the ability to jump on trees, climb, where a young person has the ability to interact with every single person in that community, not as an inferior, not as one in a negating position who is part of something. And in our African context, we have moved far, far, far away from thinking of that. We move far away from that to be in our mind as a social cue or visual cue. And for most people, we have sort of been drenched or exposed to this way of schooling. And with this way of schooling came the promise of financial well-being. I think that was the main element, financial well-being and a sensation of liberation, for specifically speaking about people of color, or speaking about indigenous native people in the South African context. So it's actually a big piece of pie, and I'm going to try to just tell you about a bit of the ingredients in this pie that we're currently facing in terms of the education cost in the South African in South Africa. So like most places, this, I do not wish to explain the story as something unique, because I feel I've been afforded the opportunity to meet Marco as well as to meet Sierra. They've explained to me a very similar narrative taking place in Ecuador as well as in the States. And it's with this that I am confident enough to make the judgment to say that I am not unique, and that we are not unique, firstly. So that breaks any idea of looking at this conversation as something that is a unique experience or an anomaly that's happening between these three people in the world. This is not the case right here. This is actually something that has happened in every single human's genetic bloodline. Even if we look at ancient European stories, Viking stories, there was no such thing as schooling as how it shows up. It was a community exercise. It was an exercise of living. It was an exercise, a practice, a meditation. There was no such thing as schooling. It was learning was as it was. I think the difficulty with this language that we use and why people might be a bit afraid of words such as unschooling, self-directed education, because these words in the Western mind tend to facultize these ideas and put these ideas in compartments or silos. But we are trying, and I think we are moving past. I mean, it's 2020. I don't think we're trying anymore. We are acting against this idea of siloing these terms and breaking down those silos, and to look at it more as a plate of food in which we are all here to engage with, a round plate of food in which we are all here to engage with and share, and each of us have a unique ingredient. And taking this, the opportunity for us to lend ourselves to something new, the opportunity to lend ourselves to a new flavor, a new texture, is this experience of learning. And this is sort of the remembering that starts to come into play, that if we look at a simple cultural norm that happens in South Africa that I can speak to a lot of my friends about, is that sometimes, for most part, for a lot of us, that when we are born, when we were first born, we never went to stay immediately with our parents because our parents were forced to work to provide for us. So we ended up staying with our grandparents. In this, the first form of education or the first form of self-directed education started to take place because we found that our grannies were trusted with the ability to raise or to collaborate in raising me or my friends or you and I, whoever is listening to this, they can resonate with the story. And in doing so, we found ourselves exposed to a way of learning, a way of cooking, a way of eating, a way of cleaning, a way of thinking that was unique to the context of that specific household. Later on, we then went to stay actually with our parents, and that was also lending ourselves to a new way of thinking. We then went on to schooling, where we lend ourselves to a community's way of thinking. Even before school, I think there was an immediate community such as neighbors, friends, and family, in which we also started to pick up certain habits or way of thinking. So I think this whole movement, let me just rewind, I know this whole movement with regard to self-directed education is a big move just to begin validating these sites of knowledge, these sites of education. And if we start to decentralize institutions, if we start to decentralize these silos, we begin to see that education is happening every single way. More so, I think for me, it happens in a very special way. Our eyes are closed, and when we dream, the mind is active, and we have the ability to even see, hear, and even learn. Place. So I'm sure this is something that doesn't need saturation, and I would like to end this podcast just to take a moment before I continue, just to pause and just let everything saturate. And and with this said further, I think that it's in that sense, if we start to validate education to show up in all these places that maybe they haven't been seen to be valid in, we begin to then become very sensitive to this idea of learning. And if it is that we are here to learn, if it is that learning is going to promise a liberation or somewhat of a better future, I think it's the sensitivity to learning and the sites in which it shows up that can maybe remind us of a certain importance, of a certain nature, of a certain, how can I put it? There's so much words, descriptors, but there's the essence that I want to get to, a certain word, a certain sense of love, a certain sense of belonging that is promised. Because I think one question most people ask is, why are we here? I think that's something everyone has sort of thought about at some place in time. However, I think it's not for us to ponder on that one too much, but to rather ask, to what do we belong? Because in asking to what do we belong, we have the ability to then find out why we are here. And education has been the keyhole to creating that sensation of belonging. Because if I belong to my granny, if I belong to my mother, if I belong to my community, if I belong to Earth, then it's in these relationships that I begin to find purpose. It's in these relationships I begin to find love, and it's in these relationships that we begin to find each other. And in a world that has made us so cold, so scared, so I think that something that does that of the opposite but shows up in the same world, such as schooling, not schooling as now this bad thing, but schooling as maybe something that's not so good but has good elements in it, Let us look at it critically, cipher out what we can, and realize, hey, we made friends in school. And we have friends that created opportunities for us and collaborations for us, and even a sense of safety and a sense of peace for us. So if it's that schooling created friends, let us look at this element and look at how this shows up in our world. And yeah, focus on these things. And I we've been experimenting with that for 4 years, and I can't say we have the biggest house. I can't say we have the biggest bank account. No, it hasn't been about that. But I can tell you one thing, that there's a connection that, I don't know, it's just a different sort of energy links to experience life. And you won't believe, every day I don't have a plan for tomorrow, yet every day something happens. And once again, I would like to reiterate, this is nothing to do with me, South Africa. I am not unique. We are all here, and all of this, I trust me, everybody else is experiencing. It's a given, just taking we are human. And as soon as we deny this human nature by creating silos or machine thinking, I think we're losing out on something, and that losing out is sort of weirdly showing up in this year.
Thanks, Giovanni. I'm so happy to hear you, to join in your heart. And what I will say is that, going again to the main opening question that Sierra proposed, is that our mind is so used to kind of think on models and on, you know, like brands, that sometimes SDE has become exactly that, you know, like a new brand. It's a new methodology. It's a new model. And you need to know who is speaking about SDE and try to do what they do. Like, use their methodologies, try to find places that met some kind of requirements. And it becomes like, you know, like trapped on the mindset of modernity. But I think that what you're telling us, it's really and exactly that. It's more about remembering who we are and remembering the ways we naturally explore and rewire ourselves and explore those relationships of belonging deeply within our hearts. And it's not about a brand, and it's not about the methodology. But the thing is, you know, like, we are being so colonized that it's really hard to kind of hack that their approach. And even when people ask, what is SDE? They will be trying to, in their brains, see like as a bunch of requirements or ideas, and not, it will be difficult for them to catch the essence, the profound root of that exploration, that is not about a methodology. It's not about like something we do. It's reconnecting profoundly with who we are. So saying that, I will say that in this particular time, I see that in Greek there are two words for time. Time can be named as chronos, and chronos is like, you know, like the natural time. But there also is another dimension of time that is kind of a divine time, that is called in Greek kairos. So I'll say that we are not in a pandemic time. We are in a kairos. We are in a special place for us as a global, planetary, human community to arise. And to, is an invitation for us to rethink, to explore new possibilities of belonging to others, to the earth, to take care of other things that we haven't previously done. So I think it's this gap of opportunity for people to be able to understand deeply. And that's amazing for me, like being recording exactly that, like, you know, like exploring together with you guys these things, because I think it's really important not being trapped in the same paradigm of modernity, but to transcend. And, you know, like at the same time, I feel like it's kind of remembering, and I agree like 100% on that. But on the other side, I think it's also embracing like this evolutionary invitation. So it's like both, you know, like remembering who we really are, but at the same time, I think we never have been as human beings in a planetary condition like the one we are experiencing right now. So it is also an invitation to reimagine and reinvent and evolve. So we won't be able to evolve if we don't remember. That's for sure. But it won't be enough just to remember at the same time. You know, just say a few ideas.
Wow. I feel so grateful for both of your words. It's just like, so soothing. I really appreciate those thoughts, and it really helps me, because I think I often get sort of trapped in this way of thinking of, I'm definitely very guilty of this, like seeing or approaching this movement or self-directed education as like a brand that I need to like defend, or something that I need to like promote or convince people of in a certain way, and really, really settling into the deeper, the nuances, the deeper, the sort of broader meaning and implications of really remembering, and what you said, Shivani, about it like being like it's not unique to, you know, someone who's been enlightened or someone who's like, you know, every single, like it can be evoked in every single person. And I think that's something in conversation with people that I need to remember, and that'll be, yeah, really helpful in not approaching it as like, here's this wonderful thing that I figured out, and it's about, you know, justice and fairness and like consent and equality, and like using all of these terms and all of this like logic, I guess, to try to convince people that it's like the right thing, and seeing it much less of like a, like from a less dualistic mindset, in that, you know, it's part of like, you know what I'm talking, I don't even have to explain it. Like, you know what it feels like when learning is natural, when it's fun, when it's part of community, when it, like everyone has had, I think, some experience or some point of reference, if it's approached in that way. And what a much more beautiful way to move into a new frame and into new worlds that's not about like fighting the old one. It's about, like you said, taking in what we, reflecting on what of schooling or what of our previous experience was valuable, and actually integrating that into what we want to create. And not just like totally negating it. So this is really, really helpful, and thank you. Thank you so much for tackling that one. And for exploring it with me. I wonder if, Marco, you would want to propose this next question that you were talking about. I think we could lead into that really beautifully around community.
Well, I think, I feel that one of the main issues has to be with hosting spaces and facilitation.
And I feel that probably the main challenge to transcend this brand methodology, modal idea or paradigm, it's due to the kind of what a facilitator really understands about his gift and his, I don't want to use like the word job. What is the job of a facilitator? But it's like the role, the gift of his presence. And as I told you, it's a big challenge for us to hack the idea that you are kind of being certified to do like this kind of following these kind of rules when you facilitate, you know? And so I have had a lot of conversations when people in SDE and Agile Learning Centers and other spaces, they kind of understood that there is like some kind of protocols that they need to follow. And they need just being inside those protocols. And when I go deeper, as exactly Chevani explained to us, like remembering and, you know, like going deeper and decolonizing yourself and kind of embracing your soul and your body, you feel like their motto or their idea is to kind of create liberating structures. But at the same time, those structures get kind of trap you in a modal. So the only way I feel that you can hack those traps, even in those liberating structures, it's by rethinking who you are as a human and re-embracing your soul and kind of model that new approach of living wholly, you know, like as a whole, I would say like human flourishing. But this thing I feel like is a big challenge for facilitators, you know? So I was wanna ask you guys, what do you have experienced or what have you experienced that could increase this opportunity of kind of seeing those invisible structures and play with them, we not being trapped on those invisible liberating structures that at the end could, you know, like still being like a trap. It's kind of clear the question, or you want me to retry to ask, or is enough clear?
So the role of the facilitator, I engaged with this question of a very similar thinking of a very similar mind space with Karim, who's all the way up in the northern point of Africa, in Alexandria, in Egypt. Yes. And upon doing a lot of readings by a lot of scholars who have written and wrote about learning, specifically looking at child-centered learning and how learning has always been something that the young person has always been audience to. So the role of the teacher or the role of the facilitator has always become subjected to a specific context that denies the young person of an experience. And I think the ideas behind self-directed education begin to break those protocols, as Marcos spoke on, that yes, there are those specific philosophers and there are those specific educators that have written in a specific context or in a specific mindset that has also in its time seen the young person to be an inferior. So this, the movement in remembering, the movement in the self-directed education, the movement in the sensitivity of learning and how that shows up requires us as facilitators, firstly, to start to embrace the first element of SDE, and that is the word self. So my first introduction into self-directed education came about this thinking of locking a young person in a room with a piano, and hopefully in 100 days, or I don't know, there's a specific measurement of it. I think you guys can help me with the amount of hours that you need to spend on a specific instrument in order to become a master at it. I think it's 1,000 hours or something.
10,000, I think, is the...
10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my thinking. Yo, lock the young person into the room. 10,000 hours is all we need. You know what I mean? I would be more than happy to facilitate that process. And... that's not what self-directed education is. I think self-directed education begins with self. What does that mean? Beginning to become sensitive to oneself, beginning to become sensitive to one's hands, beginning to become sensitive to one's way of seeing, beginning to become sensitive to one's way of smelling, tasting, breathing, and hearing. And this small meditation has a huge amount of cause and effects on so much of our day-to-day life, specifically in the context, not as a facilitator, but a co-learner. Yes, we can entertain the idea of a facilitator, but for now, let's use the word co-learner in these spaces. So you must know, you are entering the space as a very sensitive being. One could even utilize the word vulnerable, but the word vulnerable tends to mean interconnected. It's just we don't see it as that. So you enter this world, or you enter this space as a facilitator, as a co-learner, in a very vulnerable, in a very interconnected way. And you begin to realize that there's an element of magic taking place all around you. Everything from the bees to the wonderful visitor Marco just had and is continuing to have, which is a moth, to the wood. Everything seems to be functioning within a system in which there is learning, a system in which there is action, and a system in which there is, most importantly, regeneration. So when we engage with young people in their time, in their space, in their context, Before we begin to utilize the word such as engage, I think just to be the observer of their humanness, we can justify so much learning that has taken place. Excuse me. Simple curiosities such as this has showed up. Let me now think of something that showed up for me today. So today is a cold, rainy day in South Africa, and it's the 2nd of September, which is our spring month. And it's everything but spring. So we got the first two people got in this morning, young people got in this morning, and we decided to make a fire. And while we were making this fire, there was this magic curiosity to fires, as I think every single human being has. And they were sensitive to the sound it makes, because as the wood was burning, it created this loud popping sound, like a pop, and then a little flare shot out. And there was this intense shock and excitement as to this moment that just happened. And it was met with questions, it was met with curiosity, it was met with the idea of making a movie just recording that sound, it was met with the idea of why is the wood popping. So there was a curiosity as to combustion and the chemical reaction that is happening. And before I could even begin to think about all of these things, I realized the learning is happening. And this was just me taking time to think, me taking time for self. And in me taking time for self, I was really realizing all the other selves, it sounds weird if I say it like that, all the other selves that were happening, or all the other cells, because they are truly cells, but all the other actions and interactions that were happening just was in the presence of my observations. Before I could facilitate, before I could begin to draw on a board, before I could even begin to explain, there was an essence of learning already taking place. And it's with the privilege of time that I have the ability to then extend my viewpoints and my understandings upon all these elements of combustion, all these elements of noise and how I can also help them by maybe recording the sound with my phone. It's in that I realized that that's my purpose. My purpose is not to do anything but to be the observer and the participator of the learning that is happening, not just for them, but most importantly, just for myself. Because in this, there's what a lot of educators and a lot of scholars have wrote about, to be a hidden curriculum. And I don't think we need to hide from anyone. So there's no need for us to utilize the term hidden. We can actually say explicit. It's a very explicit. It doesn't require us to think. It actually shocks us. It's like it's forcing us. It just hits us with lessons. We just come out wanting to have tea. I just came out wanting to have tea. And all of a sudden, there's this huge popping sound that gave me a jump, gave everybody a jump. And there we go. We're learning. It's like, guys, I never planned this. I never wanted to do this. I had a different set of intentions. But here we are. And in that, we realized that the role of the facilitator is a very interesting dance, a very tricky dance. And I like to use the word dance because it's a conversation between the world and yourself. And I think a world where there are a lot more older people, where there are a lot more adults that have the time for self, that have the sensitivity to self, will create a world in which the ideas of daddy means a very sensitive person, with the ideas of mommy, auntie, brother, sister, is the sensitivity to being a person or to being a human. And if this person's sensitivity or the nature of the sensitivity is so explicit to learning, then indeed we are all learners, we are all co-learners, and we are all facilitators in the exact same breath. And with my navigation as a facilitator, I found it very difficult to tell people what exactly I do every day. Till today, I don't have the language, terminology, or descriptors to explain what it is I do specifically. What I do specifically as a facilitator in this space. That's why I utilize the word co-learn, that I'm just here as a chief learner or a chief listener. And all I do is listen. And in this listening is inquiry. In this listening is navigation. In this listening is exploration. And yeah, I just connect the dots where I can. If not, I'm not the dots, I'm the line. Or at times I'm not the line, I'm the dots with my own questions. And yeah, I think to speak about the facilitator is once again to still speak from the Western mind that facilitates and silos everything, and there is an expectation or specific texture as to how things are supposed to show up. And I think in this, we have to dismantle that thinking, and not dismantle to break up, but dismantle to share. I mean, I dismantle, that means I give you something. Everybody has something. So it's not dismantling as in destroying, it's dismantling as to share, as to break bread. We are all taking a piece of this. So we are all celebrating it, and we are all it whenever it's happening, however it's happening.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. Where to start? I think there's something when I first started, I guess, identifying with the word facilitator and started to imagine myself in that kind of role or what that would mean and exploring that. I remember having the first time I worked as a facilitator in an Agile Learning Center context, I remember having a bit of a panic moment because it was like I'd learned all these things about what a facilitator should be. And I, you know, had other people like watching, and I had this group of kids that I hadn't spent time with before. And I had all these expectations or like anxieties around, you know, what was my role? What was I going to do? And I remember calling up a friend who had worked in these environments before and just kind of asking for advice. And I'll never forget her words, which was just be yourself. Like, just don't worry about it. Just be yourself. And I think, yeah, that's really stuck with me. And it's so interesting where you start with what you were saying about the self and starting with that like sensitivity and that presence. And I think, yeah, I would completely agree with that. And for me, I think that's sort of through a lot of like struggling with thought, with like my ideas and my thinking around what I should be doing or what is happening or where I should be intervening or like all of these shoulds and all of these thoughts. I've kind of learned to, I've like learned to recognize when that's happening and how that's like completely always getting in the way of actually doing the thing, which is, like you said, it's literally just being present and being and listening, observing, and then actually kind of, yeah, that idea of transcending this concept, this very sort of this very individualistic concept of the self that I feel like I grew up with and that I constantly am like grappling with as something separate, right? And so the more that I can see myself as not as like as an individual self, but as in the greater sense of self and in the belonging of all, like everything that I'm interacting with, it completely changes. We say facilitator, but it's really a participant, really, in something. That I mean, it is. And you might be facilitating some aspects of it, but then everyone you're with or everything that you're with is facilitating those things for you. So it's just very circular, I suppose. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for me is as soon as I notice myself going into that sort of rational thinking of like putting things into categories and sort of making judgments about things being like good or bad, then it's just unnoticing that and kind of coming back into my body and what my senses, what I'm perceiving, and really trying to be like just as present in the moment with who I'm with. And it's like you're saying, like magic just like it just happens. And it's so interesting because I think everyone's had an experience of this, and we fight with ourselves. And I think people, like, you can tell in any given environment, especially with young people, you can tell that moment where there's like a tension or where there somebody is falling into that trap of that thinking or that agenda of that, like, things should be going a certain way, and you can feel it. And I think, you know, we were all young people at some point, so we all know what that feels like. But yeah, really, magic happens for sure once you can get into that. And it's not easy. Like, I really, for someone who, or at least for me, I'm like, you know, I've been very conditioned. but yeah, we all have it within us for sure. Thank you for that question. I'm curious to hear also from you, Marco, what your experience is.
I have like so many feelings, and the main feeling is that for me, it could be like kind of the same and at the same time, probably like a little bit different because I'm living with them, you know, like I won't say like I'm facilitating. It's like, I just like kind of building those belonging relationships, those trust and love connections. And I want to say that they are my masters. Nico and Luana have came to my life to show the path to reconnection of my wholeness and to the depths of my soul. So yes, it's amazing how, you know, like it's a paradigm shifting that like we adults are the ones who are in charge or the ones who kind of facilitate. And the experience for me is like deeply, deeply in my body, I can experience that magic of having them around me. And at the same time, while this process of reconnection is appearing and kind of flourish in me, I feel really enjoying just exploring the world with them, being who I am, but not like the kind of wounded version of me, but like kind of this version, like You know, like, this is an opportunity to be a kid again in some way, like, you know, like, be fascinated with bees, be fascinated with flowers, and being like laid down in the grass, just watching like the clouds and talking with them, and going to the river and just like feeling like, I want to jump in the cold water, and I will do it. You know, like, it's like, I don't know, like, it's this invitation to not being kind of, you know, like the one who is in charge or the supervisor, just like enjoy and embrace this amazing opportunity of rediscovering life. And I need to say that was not easy, because imagine, like, you know, like 38, 37 years of educational fragmentation, and, you know, like, it's not easy to deconstruct and reimagine yourself. But also, I want to say that when Sierra was talking, I kind of, now I'm kind of feeling that there is like a place for energy in all this kind of ambience of learning, you know, I will not say learning, like ambience of sharing, belonging, and experience life. And when we as adults are not who we are, you know, like it is like a noise. I kind of start right now, kind of feel it like, is it like a noise in the air? When someone in the place is not following his heart, her heart, or her soul, you know? So I have experienced in my life, and I have seen when there is an adult that is not comfortable in some space, and the kids are really comfortable, but because there's like kind of noise inside, you know, like, I don't know, he probably like, she don't want to be there, or he don't want to be there, or he's bored, or he has another expectations. It's kind of, you know, like, start kind of this noise, this kind of not harmonistic energy kind of is like kind of flowing in the space. And it started like kind of to feel uncomfortable for kids too. So I think it's rather to be who you really are, and even like do things that in those kind of protocols are not permitted, but being honest on with who you are, that try to, you know, like to disguise those feelings, and those, it will express in some sort of tension in the energy of the space. So I don't know if you have experienced things like that, but it's kind of difficult to say, because, like, you know, it's some sort of energy, like dissonance in the space. But for me, it's like becoming, it's each time like more evident, like that kind of perception of new generations and kids. I think like they are coming with an upgraded hardware in their bodies, so like more sensor, more sensitive, so they can catch exactly that has been happening. You know, like probably in our generation we have been kind of domesticated to do not feel that, but for them it's like, I at least Nico and Luana, I really really attuned on those kind of perceptions, you know. So I know that my time for questions is ended, but just wanna if you wanna quickly mention about that, I will be really happy.
I completely, I think, can relate to that experience. It's something in the air, but that you can feel it. And like you said, I mean, that's the gift, and that's really what for me is like the pure joy in working with people who are younger, who have still some sort of an intact sense of curiosity and openness and like an honesty that I just find so refreshing that I don't find in many other places. And for me, that's just precious. And yeah, that's going into it. I think every single time I get to spend time with a younger person, it's a sacred learning experience.
So we recently reopened, I would like to say post-COVID lockdowns. And in that time, I think I had to come to find a lot of what Marco spoke about with regard to that noise I had in myself with some of my relationships, specifically with some of the young people in the space. And it was starting to create resistance where the lack of authenticity that I exposed them to, that I projected on them, that was rooted in myself, was starting to cripple our relationship. And in that, thank God for the time I could take the time to think about it. Once again, include the self, nothing external, just me and myself in the room, where I could begin thinking about these relationships I have with these very special people in my life. And how I think it's important to think about this, our time in this world, not as a clean white canvas, as is promised to a lot of us when we begin doing art or begin drawing. We are constantly exposed to this clean white page. And the truth about this life, the truth about self, is that we are a rather interesting canvas. Some places are raised and some places are smooth. Some places are very rough and some places are just a bit weird. In all honesty, we are yet to find the descriptors for those places. And in this journey with self, I'm beginning to start to become very sensitive to this canvas of my time here on Earth. And it's through my relationships with these young people, as Marco spoke about the young people in his life and the context of that he stays with his young people. I think in the time I began to realize that, yo, even though doing this for, or being sensitive to this for like over 6 to 7 years of my time here, the work is still not done. And I don't think there will ever be a point in which the work will be done. I don't think the point is for work to be done. I don't think the point is for us to become the excellent facilitators or to become the excellent parents or for us to become the excellent learners. I think it's for us to become the sensitive ones, not the excellent ones, but rather the sensitive ones. Because it's in sensitivity that we can begin to recognize, and it's in recognition that we can begin to do the work. And my relationship with the young people, and I had the ability to go up to the young person in which I projected a lot of insecurity, with a lot of my confusion. I went back to them and I had the ability to say, yo, I just realized that I've been messing up, and I sensed that this was creating resistance in our relationship, and I would like to apologize for exposing you or for projecting these thoughts and these ideas onto you, because I think both of us knew something, and he knew it more than I did at the time, that I was not being my authentic self. And I, more than the apology, it was the gratitude for holding space and for holding time and not building up too much resentment towards me for interfering in the nature of our relationship. And I realized also in this that I've been too hard on myself, that the younger person just had the ability to say, oh, bro, of course, man, no problem. It's like, just let it go and life get it on. And for me, I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I was still having a lot of emotional, even though after the moment happened, I still had to sit with myself for a while and say, yo, he just said it's okay. He just said it's fine. He just forgave me. And even that was disruptive, you know, even that was disruptive. And that even requires now more sensitivity and more inquiry and more informing as to what this feeling is. And in that, I realized that how many people will have the ability to recognize themselves as being wrong? How many people will have the patience to exercise a practice of gratitude and apologies at the same time? And how many people will be afforded the opportunity of someone younger than them holding space for that process? And it's in that that we realize the magic of the work, the magic of this exercise, that indeed it does break the protocols, not just the protocols on paper, but the protocols with regard to our ideas of our time in this life. And this continuous exercise does, like Marco explained, it does, it's a magical invitation into beginning and continuing the reimagination, the healing, the sensitivity, the magic. And yeah, it's definitely something afforded to us by young people, whether we want it or not. That's the beauty about young people, that they are waiting for us and they have more than enough time. And yeah, that's one of my experiences. Just taking what both Sierra and both Marco were saying is that strongly shown out for me, just that patience and that time that these young people in our lives have the ability to share with us, and also breaking the idea of the facilitator, that truly affording ourselves to them has truly changed our lives as facilitators so much.
It just brought up so strongly for me, Shivani, what you were sharing around how easy it is for me to perceive that noise that Marco was talking about in other people in the space, and how much harder it is to perceive when I'm being that noise, and that's sort of another, what I think I'm learning is how much I need to be in community for that reason, because often I cannot, there's some times where I can, like what you said, like sit with myself and kind of, you know, reflect and get to a place where I realize that I did something that I need to go to apologize for, that I've been projecting something. But often, yeah, often I need other people to like point that out or to mirror that for me. But yeah, that's the beautiful thing about being in community, is we get to do that for each other, for sure. Thank you both. We've talked about so much, gotten into so much. I'll be thinking about this for the rest of the day, for sure. And yeah, we'll see each other sometime soon in the future, I hope, and get into more stuff.
We will, for sure. Thanks, Shivani, for your time, for your life, for your soul, for your openness to share, even like those vulnerable processes. Mm. I think is exactly that we need to continue like shaping the future and kind of embracing the wholeness of who we are. And it's really important to share also these kind of struggles, you know, like this kind of processes. So I'm really, really appreciated. And Sierra, also for me, hearing from you and, you know, like kind of co-hosting this space is really nourishing for my soul. So thank you guys.
Massive, massive, massive gratitude to both Sierra and Marco for holding the space. It's in this that truly this becomes a learning space as well, because learning is just happening everywhere. And I think for a lot of listeners, you would have realized that learning is happening everywhere. And just massive, massive, massive gratitude for the space, massive gratitude for the time, the energy, the breath, and the experiences. I really, really, really deeply appreciate it.
See you next time.
Till next time.
This podcast was possible thanks to the collaboration of EDIT, Education in Transformation, El Nido, Casa Abierta, Incubator for Self-Directed Education Communities, and www.rebeccacoritz.com, Learning and Parenting in Freedom. Find us on anchor.fm/semillasdelibertad or with the hashtag #SeedsOfFreedom. We hope you'll join us in the next episode.